you. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College, it is my pleasure to welcome you here to today's program, the first of the 2012-2013 season. We have 13 programs in the fall semester, and then we take a semester break and we come back in February and we have 13 more sessions. And as always, I think I can promise that they'll be varied, eclectic, interesting, informative, stimulating, and all of the rest. So I hope I will see you all here at many of those programs. Also, as usual, the Onondaga Citizens League, which is a sister organization of TMR, has a number of activities that you might be interested in, and I wanted to right away tell you about OCL's current study. It fits in actually with the current Syracuse stage production of Cry for Peace. I don't know how many of you are planning to go to that, but that is a great show that you'll want to see that is having its world premiere here in Syracuse. But the Citizens League study is on refugee resettlement, and we have a series of films coming up in October, and I'm going to be telling you more about that as we get closer, but October 2nd we'll be showing a film at 7 o'clock rather, and it is Welcome to Shelbyville. And again, as time goes on, I'm going to tell you a bit more about it, but on the OnondagaCitizensLeague.org website, there is some information, and that's going to be a theme throughout the fall. We'll be talking more about that. Well, I hope you all had a lovely summer. It does seem to go faster. We were talking about it, how as you get older, for whatever reason, I don't know if anyone has ever explained it cosmically, but time seems to go faster. I don't know. But then instead of moving faster, sometimes we tend to move slower. I don't know. It doesn't seem to really mesh. So I'm going to be trying to move faster and talk faster and keep up with everything. But again, I wanted to welcome you all. A couple of things I wanted to let our guests know, that at the end of the panelists' remarks, we do have questions. And if you raise your hand, even if you're a guest, I will try to find you and bring the microphone to you for your brief question for the panel. So we will take questions at the end. I wanted to introduce our latest new member, regular, who's Dan Hammer. Could you just raise your hand or over there? Dan, who is an employee of Onondaga County, and welcome, Dan. So get to know him. He's on the board of Visions for Change, which we've talked about here at TMR. A couple of other things. Of course, what you all have in common is you're great civic citizens and volunteers. And a couple of you that I know of, probably more, received awards over the summer. Our very own Betty DeFazio of Planned Parenthood. Congratulations, Betty, on receiving the Rhea Eccles Award, yes, from, and where did I see Jenny Fellman? There she is, Jenny Fellman, also a Volunteer of the Year Award. She was our Volunteer of the Year Award, and of course, other people then get on the boat and recognized her as well. So, you know, the typical introduction is the person, the woman who needs no introduction. And certainly with Marilyn Higgins, that's true among the Thursday Morning Roundtable community. But for those of you listening on the radio and those of you here who don't know her, currently Marilyn is Vice President of Community Engagement and Economic Development at Syracuse University. And she's responsible for the Connective Corridor and Near West Side Initiative projects that we're going to be talking about today. For those of you who haven't been on or near campus lately, it's safe now to come. The University Ave corridor is open. It's gorgeous. I have to remember to look both ways now when I cross the street on University Ave and take a left and a right and whatever. But it is, and it's magnificent, and it just, the feel of it, as well as the actual implementation and what it means for moving people, not just cars, through the area. So that's great. Anyway, Marilyn's president of the Near West Side Initiative Board, on the board of directors of the Center of Excellence, et cetera, et cetera. And her honors and awards include the Post Standard Woman of Achievement Award, the Rhea Echo Clark Citizenship Award, the Spirit of American Women Award, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Marilyn is going to introduce also her colleagues today. So thank you very much for being here, all of you.
Thank you, Sandy. OCL and TMR are really very, very special to me. When I co-chaired an Onondaga Citizens League study many years ago, I met two of my lifelong friends, Darlene Kerr and Michael Friedman. And so it holds a very special place in my heart. And Thursday Morning Roundtable, I've spoken to several times, but the last time I was here was indeed May 1st, 2008, and you all gave me the wind beneath my wings that day. I was embarking on, no question, the hardest, most challenging part of my career, trying to take these two bold ideas, and that's really what they were at that time, and make them a reality, and you were so positive. You gave me a standing ovation. I felt so great after I left here, and it really did keep me going for a while. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to be here with my colleagues, Martin Jacobs, who is the director of the Near West Side Initiative, and Linda Hartsock, who I know you all also know, who is now running the Connective Corridor. I'm going to clip really quickly. Did it work? Yay! through some slides, I've got a little clock here, so we'll stay on time. I'm going to talk for about 10 minutes. I'm going to reflect back on what happened from when I was here last, and why I think things are moving. And then both Martin and Linda are gonna give you some of the here and now and peer into the future a little bit with these two projects. I'm happy to say that these are now two successful placemaking projects. This is our offices. I don't know how well you can see that here. You have heard me talk about the mission of the Near West Side Initiative, I think three times. It is to use the power of art, technology, and innovation with neighborhood values and culture to revitalize the neighborhood. And I think you've heard me talk about the Connective Corridor, and the mission there is to literally create greater transportation between University Hill and the arts and cultural organizations downtown, but figuratively as well. It is to create really a linear stage for things that are uniquely Syracuse to activate our public streets and to help revitalize our city. What you probably don't know is that the mission of our office, in addition to implementing those two little projects, is the mission of our office is to make those two things a platform for faculty and students of Syracuse University to be engaged in the transformation of that city. And that is really fundamental to everything we do. I'm going to clip along here. For those of you who haven't been on campus, it'll give you a little idea of some of the physical changes that have taken place. Now, that's University Avenue then, and this is University Avenue now, and that is West Street then, and this is West Street now, and even though the light is shining there, can you see that all right? Okay. Much better. Yes. Thank you. That's great. No, this is fine. So I love this because this particular picture shows you so many revitalized spaces. You see the Gateway Park there. That's part of the Connective Corridor with new Armory Square signage, Tony, that everybody was engaged in developing. You see this incredible bridge art project that Martin executed, which I think is the most popular thing we've done of both projects. You see that white building there, the new home of Proliteracy as of last week, and the soon-to-be home of WCMY Public Broadcasting. And a little bit further down the road, you'll see the completely 100% occupied Lincoln Supply Building. So when you think about it, these things happened by the pace of things normally in Syracuse pretty quickly. Right? I mean, when we think how long we talked about the Creek Walk, how long we talked about many of the other major projects in town, this happened pretty quickly. So I thought about that. It didn't feel quickly when we were planning it, But I thought about that and why that is, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about that. Now, when I was here last, there was cause for a lot of optimism. Strong Hearts Cafe, have you been there? I hear they have the best vegan cupcake in North America. Had just moved to East Genesee Street. King & King Architects had left the suburbs and moved to the Near West Side. We had just submitted an application for WCMY to build a new headquarters on the empty lot we own on the Near West Side. And lucky all of us, I had just recruited Don Western away from Onondaga County's Office of Economic Development. And those of you who have worked with Don know what a master he is at managing things. And he's done an incredible job managing the state and federal grants that come into our office. So, you know, had just gotten Don on board, feeling good, everything was going great. And then five months later, the crash hit, you know, November 2008. And that was just a bad month all around. I mean, here we had decided to invest in this neighborhood, and the school at that point had been on the renovation list, as you know. All of a sudden, Blodgett School, which is in the center of the entire project, is taken off the renovation list. Our Restore New York grant got denied, okay, to build the new WCMY headquarters. The financial crisis hit, and trying to get any kind of commercial financing going to get these projects off the ground looked extremely daunting. And the connective corridor, I had learned at that point, it was about 5 months. The final design doesn't mean final design. It doesn't mean that. It means you're still 2 years away from building anything. Final design just means you can start putting drawings on paper. So. That was a discouraging month for us, but we pressed on and we have changed places. Foreman Park, the Lincoln Supply Building, and probably more important, we have, that's the Case Building. Probably more important, we've changed the way people use these spaces. And that's what this was designed to do. And it's so thrilling when Linda goes out and takes a picture and we see something like this, because this is what the corridor was designed to do. And the Near West Side as well. That's Skiddy Park, a then and now picture. Both projects are driving new investment. Another thing that they were planned to do, Copper Beach Commons and the Case and WCMY complexes. So again, I said, why were we able to prevail despite all of our problems? And here's what I think. The project aspirations for both of these projects, bold ideas is how I presented them to you 4 years ago, were really high. And it would have been very easy, given everything that happened in November 2008, to scale back the ambition of both projects, particularly the corridor. I think to myself, my God, we didn't think we'd ever get more money to complete the thing. And it would have been very easy to put some banners up and declare victory, quite frankly. But anyone who's driven down East Genesee Street will tell you, we have very old streets in Syracuse. And when you decide to do this right, it costs a lot of money. And it creates a lot of aggravation. But we didn't back off. We've done it right. You can see the results on University Ave. And Mayor Minor came right in, stepped right up to the plate. There were people in this community who thought we shouldn't have bike lanes. That was too avant-garde a thing for Syracuse. And as soon as she came in, she stepped right up to the plate. She brought a great team of people together. And again, Don Western, working closely with Owen Kearney from the city, went forward and got another $10 million, a Tiger grant. Very, very hard to get. Very competitive grant process. So now we have the funds to actually complete the project. Project aspirations were kept high on the Near West Side as well. And I have to tell you, I turned 60 this past month, and in all my years of boards and community work, I have never worked with a more challenging group of type A personalities in my life. And in retrospect, I realize how important that was. No one thought we were going to succeed. So that allowed Kathy Goldfarb Findling and I to really choose people to work with who were creative, self-confident people who we liked working with. That made an enormous difference. This group of people did not hesitate to discuss the tough issues right from the beginning, whether it was gentrification or the scrutiny of the media or whatever. And this group, and several of them are in this room today, kept these project aspirations high. It was messy and difficult, but we came through, and I think we stayed true to our mission. The strategies were very clear from the beginning. Listen first was the strategy for both projects. As Mary Ellis Smothers from the Near West Side will say, ask me. I lay my head down here at night. And we do that. We listen pretty well. The chancellor was right. The chancellor was more right about this than I could have imagined. Scholarship in action sounds like a buzzword. It is so real, and it is so powerful. And Martin and Linda will give you some good examples of that, but everything from constructing little free libraries with residents and IT professors to former crack houses turned into neighborhood art centers. This is a powerful strategy. Everyone wins and it works. Another strategy was that arts should be a driver for both projects. That also proved to be correct. The arts create a neutral space for people to talk across differences. The arts create an opportunity for people to meet halfway on difficult issues. And the arts inspire participation. The number of parents who would stand in front of Case Supply from the Near West Side and look up at Stephen Mann's Literacy Through Photography exhibit and see their children there, and then you'd see them 2 days later and they'd have a little bigger group around them all looking up at their child's face. You can't put a price tag on that kind of participation, because that is what makes these projects work. The momentum that comes from people's involvement and engagement. Or you can look at this, and this is this wonderful QR code mural that was done on Lemps Jewelers downtown. So what have you got? You've got students talking to downtown merchants. Again, something that you wouldn't normally see happen. Another part of the strategy, and this was Mark Robbins and Ed Bogus and the chancellor, they said you have to create signature facilities. You've got to do things that stand out. Again, they were right. We were working in the neighborhood for about 2 years before we got any one of these big projects underway. We'd done other great stuff with OHA, the history of the neighborhood, many other things, but we hadn't got anything big done yet. And people in the neighborhood at the monthly meeting said, yeah, when are you going to do these projects? And there was a skepticism, because they had been promised a lot in the past, and nothing had ever been delivered. So when we did this building first, the Lincoln Supply Building, and when we got this finished, Dan Quarry hung Christmas lights on it, and we invited the neighborhood to come. And there were 200 people standing outside that building singing Christmas carols. That is the moment. That's what I call the seeing is believing moment in the Near West Side. So the signature facility thing was indeed correct. So those were our plan strategies: listen first, scholarship in action, using the arts as a driver, and creating signature facilities. What we did not know, and what I'd like to tell you about, was the energy that is created by what I've come to call unlikely coalitions. And that's a picture of an unlikely coalition. There is, in the forefront, Isaac Rothwell, a young man who grew up in that neighborhood, left, came back, bought a home built by School of Architecture students, and is raising his young family there. He's standing next to Mary Ellis Smothers, who is hard to describe. She runs the West Side Family Center and is a rock in the neighborhood. Next to Gladys Smith. Gladys was, for a long time, the president of the Public Housing Tenants Association, and she gets along extraordinarily well with the guy who's standing next to her, who is the president of Scotsman Press, Bill Veit. And behind Bill, you'll see Robert Dano, who I know you're going to have later this year, who is entrepreneur supreme, and you have Bob chatting with Father Jim Matthews of St. Lucie's Church. This is the energy of unlikely coalitions. I had no idea what it could produce. When you harvest this, it is astounding. People from all backgrounds, all walks of life. I did not appreciate the power of inviting everyone in to participate. When you do, it makes an enormous difference. And this is symbolic for us as well. We decided that when you start a new project, we all got sick of the traditional, six people with a shovel. The important people get up front with their shovel and You know, even if it's winter, we pretend we're putting a shovel in the ground. Enough with that. What we do in the Near West Side is we pass around a bowl of salt. And everybody takes a pinch of salt. And on the count of three, we all throw the salt over. And that's to send good luck to either the workers in the building or the people playing on the project. And that's what happened this day in Skiddy Park. And you see Jim Boeheim there. And you see Paul Nojame's parents there. And that's also a part of the energy that I'm talking about, the energy of unlikely coalitions, the people who come along and help. Here you have a Maxwell professor playing jazz on a Central bus. Same theme, unlikely coalitions. Here you have a physics professor, an architect, and two theater professionals. Have you been to this plaza? Have you stepped on those pavers? Is it cool? No? Well, most people tell us it is, Sarah. So what I want to say is that when you invite everyone in, you gain innovation and confidence and the sense of what's possible. HUD Secretary Donovan was here. It was Martin's first day of work. And he said to us, "You seem to have assembled a menagerie of change agents." And I said, "Yes, we have." And I think what results is national recognition for what Syracuse can do. And Syracuse can be one of the five communities in the United States featured in the PBS series on healthy communities. And Syracuse can have a green home designed by a world-renowned architect and featured in the Wall Street Journal. And Syracuse can be written up as impressive in CEOs for Cities newsletter, a very influential newsletter. And Syracuse can build a green arts district. And Syracuse can capture the energy of an incredible guy named Rick Destito, who can turn a dollar home into a story about the rebirth of our city that gets published in the New York Times. And Syracuse can grab attention in national publications. Syracuse can do all of that. And the reason, one of the reasons that Syracuse can do all of that is because when you have exceptional people who know how to work in teams, like Martin Jacobs and Linda, there's just no end to what Syracuse can do. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Martin.
Great. Is it all right if I stand? I'm going to stand if that's all right. Just feel infinitely more comfortable that way. So Marilyn did a great overview of talking about where we started and how far we've come, and I've had the good fortune of being with the Near West Side now for the last 3 years. Prior to that, I was on the North Side working with Dominic Robinson, who I think some of you heard from a few weeks ago. I'll show you a broad overview of a lot of the projects, and then I'll get into some of the detail, especially of the real success stories, and then showing the future projects that we have in the pipeline right now. But just here, you can see the map of the neighborhood and see all the things that have been accomplished in the last few years there, and we'll go into some detail. Just in terms of commercial property development, and Marilyn has already alluded to this, but I wanted to show you a few of the pictures, again, of how far it's come and all the things involved. The Lincoln Building, it has 10 artist live-work apartments. All are fully occupied. Happy to say that few people do actually run their business out of there. We have a mix of about half are artists, half are just professionals in the community. They're true loft apartments, they are leased very quickly. We've been had great success. By the time the building opened, they were all leased, and we continue to lease them very quickly. It's a LEED Platinum building. We finally got word that that's the case. We're very proud of that. It has geothermal heating and a variety of other kind of implementations to make it LEED Platinum. And also, what you can see at the bottom left there is Chris Clemens we worked to have all the old wood beams taken out of that structure, replaced with steel, and then that wood is being reused for a variety of different projects, of which I'll share one at the end. Case Supply Building that Marilyn also touched on, there's a picture of the inside of Proliteracy. They just had their official opening the other day. Wonderful turnout, great event, but it is a remarkable building. State of the art will hopefully be LEED Silver at the end, and then WCNY also moving in there. The importance of that is not just that we're going to have a great building that was previously vacant that will be restored, but also that we're going to have about 150 employees in the neighborhood on a daily basis again in a space that prior to that had no one. So when you think about what that can do for small businesses in the neighborhood and obviously adjacent to downtown as well. Some of the residential work that we've done, this has been done almost entirely through Home Headquarters. They've been an amazing partner, and that's really what's made the Near West Side Initiative such a success. I am technically the only full-time employee for the Near West Side Initiative, but that works only because of the partnerships that we have with COE, School of Architecture, obviously a lot of the schools at Syracuse University, and then also Home Headquarters, who's really been our main partner, as well as the Gifford Foundation, who really kickstarted a lot of the resident engagement that then myself and some of the Gifford staff have really continued to keep that going. In this case, Home Headquarters bought over 104 properties in the neighborhood. Not all had houses on them, many did. And the motto has always been to you know, retain the building whenever possible, to not demo if not necessary, but to rebuild that. And in cases where it is required, we will build new. And so to date, about 60 buildings have been renovated. All are first-time home buyer. It's been amazingly successful. All have sold quickly. In fact, usually the buildings are sold while they're still in construction. So we're happy to say that about 60 homes that were previously vacant are now full of folks again. And the ratio is really important. You know, we talk a lot about what is the mission of the Near West Side. And first and foremost, I always say the mission is to improve the quality of life of people living in the Near West Side that have been there for decades. But we also recognize that there is a lot of vacant space, a lot of vacant property, and that we want to encourage people from outside the neighborhood, whether that be the suburbs or surrounding area of Syracuse or beyond, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, to consider relocating into the Near West Side and see what's going on, and that it's the neighborhood closest to downtown, it's amazingly walkable and really affordable. And so to date, we have about 70% of the homes sold have gone to people that were previously living in the 13204 zip code, and about 30% have gone to those from outside the neighborhood. And to us, that is the exact ideal ratio that we want to keep. So it shows, again, that people in the neighborhood are having first dibs and first opportunities. And then we are also trying to bring folks from outside the neighborhood in. Neighborhood engagement. This is certainly probably the biggest part of my job, certainly the part that I enjoy the most. And it's really just spending time with residents, building relationships and building coalitions in the community and engaging people. So that ranges from having large monthly community meetings at the Boys and Girls Club to having, you know, meetings in people's homes, grabbing coffee and just connecting and seeing what's going on, doing asset-based development and really trying to see what all the positives are in the neighborhood and then build on those to just continue to improve what's going on. And then we also think events and really changing the physical infrastructure of the neighborhood is important, particularly public spaces, to show that there's work going on in the community and work that all the families in that neighborhood can benefit from. So Marilyn already mentioned Skiddy Park being redone. First it was the basketball courts that were redone by, well actually I should say, first it was the baseball diamond that was redone by Major League Baseball, and then the courts were redone just about a year and a half ago by Courts for Kids and the Bayham Foundation. And then we were able to work with the city and our donors to rebuild the playground, and that was installed in May and dedicated that to Paul Seymour, who was a Nats player and worked in the neighborhood. And so now the park is almost 100% complete. We just have the field house to finish. So that's our next project there. Block party, celebrating buildings that are completed. But you know, I think a block party is really a big catalyst. For Marilyn, the moment was at Lincoln when she saw, you know, 200 people standing there celebrating that building. For me, it's always been these block parties that we've been doing that just keep getting bigger and bigger. This last year, we had about 1,500 people come through from the neighborhood just celebrating what's going on in the community that day. What's been really important to us, and I know you hopefully heard about this from Dominic as well, was that we have to tackle the challenge of unemployment in our neighborhood. The statistics kind of range, but at times we've seen it as high as 40%. And that's not just because people don't want to work, it's because there's a whole slew of barriers that prevent people from working. So we've been working with Northside Urban Partnership to bring Green Train into the Near West Side, because it's been so successful on the North Side that we really, instead of trying to rebuild a new model, you know, why not just replicate what's going on there, working with partners. So we've done about 3 or 4 sessions now. I think it's been about 60 people that have gone through the program, and to date we have 85% success rate in full-time employment, which is well above any national average for workforce development programs. Marilyn touched on the other really fun part of my job is engaging students and the community in creating projects that really benefit both the students and the faculty as well as the neighbors in identifying challenges and problems they have and how students might be able to help. So for a long time, residents talked about how there's a challenge in literacy, and obviously pro-literacy moving into the neighborhood helps that a lot, but also that most folks don't have cars, and a lot of people have disabilities, and so they cannot reach the public library that easily. So we started talking about, could we install what we called, you know, little free libraries throughout the neighborhood? And that idea came from what residents had been talking about, but then someone from the IT school, a professor, said, I hear about this going on in Wisconsin. Could we do it in the Near West Side? So we ran a one-day, what we call charrettes, to bring everybody together. And we talked about it. Residents identified where they wanted them, the types of book that they wanted. They wanted to make sure it was bilingual. And then students from industrial design designed them. And students from the IT school, the library science part of that program, worked to do a full catalog, a book drive. And now we have over 3,000 books sitting. They were in our office. They finally moved to the basement. And we are getting those books out. We have stewards from the neighborhood who take care of them. So I drop off books to residents. And then they go and they make sure that those libraries are stocked. Arts is really important to us as a way of community engagement and as an economic tool. Again, these were the bridges that were done in partnership with Steve Powers, a national artist. We thought it was really important in this case to bring someone who had done similar work in the past throughout the country. We wanted to get national attention for this, but we also wanted to make sure it was an artist who was engaged in communities where he did his work. And he spent about 2 weeks asking people what is it that in the neighborhood that they love and hate about their community. And then regardless of what they say, he turns that into what he calls a love letter to Syracuse. And so those are some of the pieces that you see there. We also have Juan Cruz, amazing artist from Puerto Rico, lives in the neighborhood, had been living in the neighborhood, amazing artist, and we had him, we were able to fix up a building and have him be our first full-time artist in residence who lives on the second floor and teaches on the first floor, and he was selected really by the residents as someone that they wanted to be the artist who represented them in that community. 601 Tully, Marilyn alluded to the fact that that building right next to Blodgett was a crack house. Through one of the windows would be where you'd kind of tap on the wall and they would hand drugs right through there. Now that exact same window is where a little coffee shop is, and there's a community space there, and then on the second floor is a gallery and a classroom. And that was again in partnership with several schools really from the university, but particularly Marion Wilson, who's really been the faculty driving that project through. It took her about 2 years, and now it's just full of life on a day-to-day basis. Just some other projects, Lipe Art Park is there, and then what Subcat Studios and the Red House with Scott Allen have been able to do, and Burton Blatt Institute there as well, to bridge between Armory Square and the Near West Side. Having that little island has always kind of been an awkward space, and having Subcat and again the Red House there has just been fantastic for us. I'll go through these quickly. Green infrastructure and sustainability is amazingly important to us. We worked with the School of Architecture to have a green homes competition that was featured in Dwell magazine. Three homes were constructed and they are complete and owned and look absolutely wonderful, all LEED Platinum. We talked about some of the basketball courts using green technology whenever possible, rain gardens, porous pavement. And then working with CH2M Hill and the Save the Rain program to do a Tisco Street and turn that into an entirely green street has been really excited for us. And then just quickly some future projects. We just got a grant through Art Place based on the work that they'd seen us do over the last several years to take the building next to Lincoln, which is a total eyesore, and convert it into two more art apartments upstairs for artists, and then on the bottom floor, three art studios and a small gallery, and we'll have an artist-in-residence program there where we link a national artist and a local artist living together in the same apartment and sharing a studio together, because we think it's important to have this conversation about local and national artists working jointly. Moving on, Maine, we just were excited that we got a grant for that recently to host a design competition where we examine Wyoming Street, which is at one end you have Paul Nojames' grocery store that's been there for almost 100 years, and then WCNY on the other end, and linking those two anchor buildings with Wyoming Street, which we think can be a main thoroughfare, and we want to encourage health and really activity on those streets. So we're going to try and make it an engaging street that we'll have a design competition for. And then one of the last projects, Millworks, it's taking that old wood that I mentioned that came out of Lincoln, came out of Case, and working to start small batch furniture, a furniture company with Green Train graduates to so that they can really turn a profit, and it'll be a social enterprise that can be used to fund Green Train into the future, working with some Syracuse faculty to do the prototyping for that furniture. And then No James, St. Joe's expansion. St. Joe's will be expanding there. They have a small clinic. It will be quadrupling in size and really linking up with No James grocery store, who's also getting a makeover, really, and we'll be linking those through a lot of programming. And then also West Street. It's a disaster of a street, in my opinion. 9 lanes at its widest. We're trying to calm that street and do a pedestrian crosswalk between the Near West Side and in Armory Square there, so it's a safer way to cross. And with that, we'll hand it over to Linda.
Thanks. Thanks. So you can see that we all have incredible passion for what we do, and it's so wonderful to be engaged in this kind of enterprise. So I'm going to do a quick flyover of the Connective Corridor so we stay on time and leave time for questions and answers. So yesterday, I was walking up the street, taking these pictures, and there was a gentleman who I didn't know walking up the street with folks who were clearly international. And surrounding him were people walking, people biking, people pushing baby carriages, people going down the street in wheelchairs. And he said, you know, this is really cool. This is the Connective Corridor. This is the way all of the universities on the Hill are connecting with the community. And it's so great to be part of a place that wants to see that connection happen. And I thought it was so wonderful to hear someone, totally unsolicited, explaining it to people here from out of town, because that's exactly what we see it as, that way to connect the entire University Hill with downtown. So this is Syracuse leading, but doing it very much in partnership with the SF and UMU and the hospitals and the medical centers on the Hill. And it's a literal and metaphorical translation of the Chancellor's vision to create that two-way street, to put scholarship into action. And in a very literal sense, it is the single biggest public infrastructure investment the city of Syracuse has seen in over three decades, and a real example of placemaking, which we know is important. If we look at, the project area, phase one, University Ave, complete this summer. East Genesee Street, there is an end in sight, the last week of October. It will look like University Avenue, so it's nice as you sort of turn the corner to get that sense of before and after. Phase two will take us from Foreman Park across Genesee Street, Fayette Street, over to the warehouse, and through that west side terminus. And then there's also a section of the corridor called the Civic Strip, bounded by Water Street, by Adams Street, Montgomery, and State Street, which is our museum cultural historic district. And we're working on putting together for all of these phases of the project, streetscapes, as well as aesthetic improvements. It's built, this entire project is built on four foundational propositions. One is literally, as I said, building community connections. You know, I've been doing economic development a long time. In New York State, I've made a study of other regions across the country. I've taught this for nearly 30 years. And we know that vibrant communities are communities that invest in themselves. And we know those vibrant communities are places that attract the best and brightest and attract other investment. And they have a sense of aesthetics. They've created venues that really say something about themselves. And that's what we're trying to do in a very ambitious way with this project. We also know that universities have a role to play in this as anchor institutions, and they have the ability and should have a compelling reason to leverage their resources as an anchor institution to build these connections. And what we like about this proposition is this is a 2-mile east-west corridor that intersects with a 2.5-mile north-south corridor, the Creek Walk, to really create a network through Syracuse of walkable, livable central business districts and neighborhoods. It's also an example in a fairly unprecedented way of collaborations that you don't see happening in many other places around the country. So a private university partnering shoulder to shoulder with city government, with county government, with the private sector, an entire supply chain of local contractors and subcontractors who've been involved in this project, as well as funders, state funders, federal funders, National Grid, Time Warner, other private sector partners across the community. It's an example of engagement, which Marilyn talked about, which I see as kind of the highest, best example of civic and social entrepreneurship. So, you know, in my past life, I dealt a lot with venture development and this whole idea of entrepreneurship. How do we create entrepreneurial communities by, again, engaging students, faculty, staff, nonprofits, foundations who've been partners with us, community volunteers, and approaching this as a real shared enterprise? We also know that when we engage students in work in a community, they're more likely to stay after graduation. And a great example is the young man in the bottom right-hand photo, Steve Klimek. Steve started as a student in the School of Architecture. He launched a student venture in the student sandbox called Storefront Syracuse, which worked on adaptively reusing empty spaces downtown. He worked in our office as an engagement fellow, finished his master's degree in architecture. In fact, he's one of about 100 architecture projects in the world that are being featured this month in the Venice Biennial, which is the creme de la creme of you know, sort of a global architectural showcase. We hired Steve to stay. Steve has just joined the ranks as an adjunct faculty member in the School of Architecture and continues to be engaged in community building. And these are the kinds of examples that we want to see and the seeds that we want to place across the community. And then finally, transformation. Again, many of us who've been involved in economic development over the years have looked at Syracuse as a great test case for ways in which a Rust Belt city, a legacy city, can reinvent itself. Brookings for years has done studies about us as a place where people, capital, and jobs have fled. They're now looking at us as a place that's at the tipping point, that's on that verge of renaissance, that's beginning to attract people and capital and grow new jobs through a new economy and engage in venture development. So how do we, you know, how do we bring those pieces together, change the economy, change the social and physical fabric of the community in a transformative way? So now we have the quick fly-through. The connective corridor is creating great urban spaces like Foreman Park, more green spaces and gathering places for people with context-sensitive design, good landscape architecture, sustainable urban design. This is just a beautiful place. It was designed by Olin Partnership, which just finished the Rodin Garden in Philadelphia. So bringing in a world-class group to help us rethink public space, again, working with local firms, and creating a real park for that hotel and restaurant district, as well as a space for the community. Streetscapes, you know, complete streetscape redesign. Everything from traffic calming and medians that you'll see on East Genesee Street to new streets, granite curbs, brick pavers, new crosswalks, new signals, new lighting, new amenities like bicycle racks and benches and landscaping. You will see this continue across the city over the next 2 years. New bike and pedestrian paths also that will be part of a green network. You know, Syracuse has been known as a green city. This says green in a very big way. We're one of the first cities in the country to use these new green methacolite bike technologies to create a green bike network. This bikeway will be the anchor for the city's new bike master plan. And again, the goal is to make this community a place that people can interact with in so many different kinds of ways. Martin touched on green infrastructure. This is a great partnership with Onondaga County and Save the Rain. You know, I just came back from the Southwest, where communities are struggling with the issue of how they harvest and manage what is increasingly becoming one of our most precious resources, water. This community is so far ahead of the game in terms of what it's doing with green infrastructure. The EPA is looking at this as a model. In fact, the Assistant Secretary of the EPA came recently to look at what's happening here. So a network of green infrastructure that underlies the green bike lanes with silva cells and rain gardens and native landscaping and porous concrete, and permeable pavers and tree trenches. When all is said and done at the end of the Connective Corridor project, we will have harvested and managed 6 million gallons of water annually. Free public transportation, so you've seen the buses. They go both ways. So we want to encourage you in the community to take these free buses to campus, as well as encouraging students to take them downtown to the more than 30 arts and cultural venues that are part of the Connective Corridor. These are student-designed buses in terms of the wraps and the interiors. There are about 120,000 users a year. We've just put together an onboard wayfinding program to make it even easier for you to figure out how to use the bus, where it's going, where the stops are, how to get off, how to get on, because we know that's important. And that's part of creating a smart transportation network. We have a great partner with Centro. So there are onboard GPS systems with real-time tracking. They tell you where you're going, when the next stop is. That's tied to a new mobile app that a doctoral student in the iSchool produced for us, working with faculty members in VPA, which are directly linked to that onboard GPS, so you can stand there with your smartphone and know when that next bus is coming to your stop with real-time displays. And again, we want to make that user experience so much easier. Interactive public art. Marilyn talked about the SALT mural on the side of the LEMP building. Faculty member from the School of Architecture with a group of students working with OHA, the Erie Canal Museum, created a mosaic of a historic scene from the Erie Canal, which reveals, which is comprised of QR codes linked to the 30 plus cultural venues along the corridor. The Urban Video Project, another great partnership with Lightworks, with the Everson, featuring custom videos designed by world-class artists, as well as this summer a very exciting outdoor film series and the first ever cultural fair. Visual art, the Connective Corridor funded this year a Syracuse public artist in residence working closely with the Public Art Commission and a working group to create and install public art along the corridor. We've been very involved with the Public Art Commission and their new art master plan. We worked with regional artists like Colleen Wolpert to create some interesting projects again, along with OHA at Foreman Park. Over the next month, we'll be announcing a solicitation for $650,000 worth of new public art that we'll be bringing to this community. Working with the Downtown Committee, the Community Foundation, to look at ways we build sustainable models for public art funding in the community, because as both Martin and Marilyn said, we see this as a real driver. Performances, faculty, students, community musicians, dancers. We've had ballerinas on the bus. We've had flamingo dancers on the bus. We have put in place an in-motion series that just puts music in motion, music and dance in motion. Gateway enhancements. We were thrilled to work with Tony and the Armory Square Business Association on gateway enhancements at the entry to Armory Square, very important visitor destination center. Branding, you'll see this play out over the next couple of months along the corridor, working with Pentagram to create a signature look for Syracuse around the word use. Syracuse, use your city, use the bus, use art, activate and engage. And again, you'll begin to see that playing out. Wayfinding, we're working with SMTC, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and other stakeholders to create a downtown signage and wayfinding system consistent with that brand that will help people find and navigate their way around the city. And we think that's important. The Convention and Visitors Bureau, very excited about that. Urban lighting. So this is exciting. We think that Syracuse has the ability to begin to brand itself as a city of light. you've ever been to Paris, you know that old buildings light up beautifully. And Ben Walsh in the city is very excited about this as well. So the first project was Forman Park. You have to go by at night. Tillett Lighting, who did the lighting for Bryant Park, created this very unique lighting program that activates with fireflies and sensors in the trees. Syracuse Stage, a sensor-activated outdoor lighting installation. The bottom left, St. Paul's Church, we're working with them in other buildings along the corridor to light those iconic buildings up at night, visible from 81. And then we're working with a local company to outfit and replace lights along the corridor with very energy efficient LED lighting and creating some signature overhead lighting for Jefferson Street that you'll see over the next year to help guide people from downtown to Armory Square. We see the Connective Corridor as a technology testbed, and that's something really exciting to us, to find local companies that are producing new technologies, whether they're sensor technologies or advanced LED lighting or solar technologies, to integrate them into the corridor. Again, I've worked with entrepreneurs for the last number of years, finding those first adapters to beta test those technologies, prove them, get them into the market is a challenge. And for us to have the ability to do that, to be that testbed, to help to develop and deploy and get these products into market is very exciting. And it also means that we're helping grow those local companies along the corridor as well. Over the next couple of months, you'll see facade improvements play out over the corridor. We have awarded $625,000 in grants to 41 building owners to make enhancements to their properties. Awnings, paintings, new doors, new windows, landscaping, more tables and chairs outside in Armory Square, more bike racks to, again, activate those bike lanes. Historic preservation and interpretation. This is such a fun project. Dennis, thank you. You've been so great to work with, and Greg as well at OHA. Couldn't ask for a better partnership. A gateway project for Armory Square, fusing iconic images from Syracuse's past along the corridor with original art by design students at Syracuse University to interpret what is truly some of the great assets in this city. Working across different disciplines in the university to create social media, info spots, new technologies that will be little spots embedded along the corridor where, again, people can understand what's there, how to activate the corridor, and really how to get around the city. And with that, you know, sort of behind it, bringing what it is that I really like to do best and what these guys are so good at, real estate and project development. You know, the fact that the university and the city's making these investments has really empowered and emboldened other private sector companies to take on some daring investments. These two buildings at our window, notable examples. The Washington Station building, $30 million project by the Pioneer Company in O'Brien and Guerin right next to it. Another nearly $30 million investment by the Sykes family at the Inns at Armory Square. Two of the biggest real estate projects, again, since the early 1990s. And we're working with the development community to look at other spaces along the corridor and how we create real estate infill and how we populate those second and third floors and get new economic activity going. So what's next, very quickly? You're going to see the rest of the corridor play out, literally. And then finally, the last layer is building the high-speed corridor, embedding this with technology, layering over it, a high-speed network. We're working with New Visions to develop grant applications to wire the corridor in downtown at the speed of light. And literally, we're talking about the kind of network that Google has in Kansas City that would put us on a map as a place where, you know, the best, the brightest in terms of technology development want to be and want to populate because they've got that infrastructure embedded on top of it. And then activating it with events and continuing to drive investment to downtown. We see it as sort of the perfect example of bringing it all together and making transformative change and proving that cities like Syracuse can reinvest, can reinvent, and can bring together coalitions to make real change. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Marilyn.
Thank you. I just want to I talked about the Onondaga Citizens League, our last study on creating better community image. And we talked a lot about the importance of urban design in public spaces and public art and green spaces. And I really experienced that this past weekend. My daughter was married in the city, and we had several dozen people from all over the country staying on the East Genesee Street corridor in those three hotels. And they walked up to campus, and they walked over to the Rose Garden where the ceremony was, and they took the downtown committee historic walking tour booklet, and they did the tour, and they went in the buildings, and they had dinner in the renovated historic. And I was so proud, because they were so impressed. And it made me feel good, and they felt good. So it is all about community image and spurring more investment. So thank you for all that you're doing in those parts of town. So we have about 5 minutes for questions. There was a lot of information there, a lot of visuals. Any overarching questions here? Any last words? Marilyn, we have a question over here, but you know, again, I think you've got to see it, you've got to appreciate it, and I think looking at it through the eyes of people who are not from Syracuse is really, it's inspiring to us all, because, you know, we go to Paris or we go to San Francisco or wherever. San Francisco, the people in the Midwest were so impressed by our buildings, you know, they don't have those old buildings.
Yes, you talk about phase two, moving closer down Genesee into the city. What are your plans to engage new players, people who haven't perhaps, who are part of that community but haven't been involved?
Well, we're always reaching out all the time, and that's one of the beauties of being a community this size. You know, Syracuse says you need to call so-and-so, and it happens pretty quickly. So yeah, we have regular meetings of business groups and others, and we have that office, which is bright and colorful and open, and we invite everybody in to talk to us. We're very open door. So, and we reach out as well. We really do.
Linda, you mentioned there was a master plan for expanding the bike paths throughout the city. Is there, have there been discussions about replicating a lot of what has been done on the west side in other places such as the south side, the north side? Has there been conversations about that, and what, if anything, would happen in that regard?
In terms of the bike plan, first of all, you can find it on the city website. It's and it's very much neighborhood-based. So yes, I think they're looking at replicating those kinds of designs and approaches in neighborhoods across the city. You know, and we've taken a page from best practices. So we've looked at great bike communities like Portland and Madison, Wisconsin, and said, you know, how do we use that as a framework to build a broader community-based sort of hub and spoke approach to developing those kinds of projects? So yes, I would encourage you to get on the city's website and look at the bike master plan.
The other thing is that I think what we're just beginning to see, Carol, is the power of an anchor institution to drive revitalization. And St. Joe's Hospital is doing this on the north side, using this multiplicity of capability, whether it's purchasing, whether it's hiring. You know, that's what the university has done in the near west side. That's what St. Joe's is doing beautifully on the north side. I think we need some anchor adoptees on the east and south as well.
Okay, I want to thank you again. I also want to thank you mentioned Don Western, and he's hiding in plain sight in the middle of the room. Don, I'm not going to let him get away. Don, can you wave? Ah, no, he's not. See, shy. Thank you, Martin Jacobs, Marilyn Higgins, Linda Hartsock.